Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, The Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed podcast brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 391. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at ToolShedPod. I have a great guest in the Toolshed with me this week. He is a writer over at Fangraphs and host of the Sleeper and the Bust podcast, one of the best in the business, at Sporer on Twitter. That's S-P-O-R-E-R. Mr. Paul Sporer joins me. Paul, how are you, bud?
Eric, I'm doing very well. Thank you for that wonderful introduction, and it's great to talk with you.
Likewise. It's always a pleasure talking baseball with you. What's that hat you got going on there? I'm liking it.
It's a snow cone, which is called a raspa here. I cannot roll my R's. Pardon me on that. But that's what it is in Spanish, and it was part of Corpus Christi's Mexican Heritage series that they did, the Corpus Christi Hooks, and they had a sandal, a flip-flop, commonly referred to as a chancla, and a couple others, and I had to get the snow cone because shaved ice down here. You know, I grew up, I don't know what you interpret as a snow cone, but there were these, like, chipped ice pieces of garbage that used to come off the ice cream truck, and that was called a snow cone. That's what I knew a snow cone as a kid. Had very little flavoring in it, and again, it was like chips of ice. It wasn't good. Yeah. So when I moved to Texas and I had a friend ask me if I wanted to get snow cones, I was like, not really. Truth be told, nice young lady, became one of my best friends, but I kind of had a crush on her at that moment. And I'm like, well, yeah, I'll do that. Right. So I'm like, I'm going to go because I want to keep hanging out with her. But I was like, I'm not excited about this, but it's shaved ice and it is very fine. It's like a snowball and they're amazing. And they'll pour a bunch of flavor on for you, way better than anything I had referenced as a snow cone in my head. So raspa, one of my favorite treats that you can get in other places besides Texas. I'm sure shaved ice, it's not a Texas original, but I am very big fan. And when I saw this hat, it just kind of fit my aesthetic.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's definitely like a Paul Sporer color theme right there. Fits right in with the look you've made famous over the years. Yeah. I love it. Right in the summertime, a good shaved ice. What's your favorite flavor? Pick your top three favorite flavors.
The natural lemon was what I had at that moment. I loved it. I love grape everything. I'm a child. I know same. That's usually associated as a kid's flavor. I just love it. So yeah, it'd be those two. And then I'll do like a strawberry every once in a while. But when I go back to Harlingen, which I don't really anymore because my mom no longer lives down there, but Harlingen, Texas is where I got them, the natural lemon at their stands around town. Just excellent. Now my mouth is watering. There's a chain called Bahama Bucks here that we have in Austin and again other places. It's a national chain that does pretty good. They're pretty solid. They're not on the level of Harlingen's random little stands around town, but it's pretty good. Bahama Bucks, if you're looking for a good shaved ice, might be in your town.
Nice. Yeah, grapes definitely on my top three as well. I like the lemon, but I think my other two in the top three would be I'm a big watermelon guy. Ooh. And mango too. I love me a good mango.
Ooh. Jennifer loves mango. My girlfriend, huge on mango. So she's definitely gotten plenty of good mango ones out there too. So yes, yeah, can't really go wrong. I could talk way too much about shaved ice, but I know we want to talk some baseball tonight.
Yeah, we could talk the next hour just on shaved ice.
Absolutely.
We are here to talk baseball and some early season pitching notables, both good and bad. Got 12 names total on the list. But before we get into those, get the usual housekeeping out of the way. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. You can find all of my content on Rotoballer or over on my Patreon, toolshedfantasy.com. And make sure you check out all the great content over on Rotoballer with Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass. Gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners. Import your leagues with TeamSync and get expert advice customized for your league-specific settings. Win more with Rotoballer's lineup assistant tools, free agent finder, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use that discount code TOOLSHED at checkout. All right, let's start with a couple of debuts from today on Sunday. We're recording this. It's about 8:30, 8:40 on Sunday night on the East Coast. And we had two debuts. Well, not one debut and one recall, I'll say. But we'll start with that debut and Mick Abel with the Philadelphia Phillies, who outdueled Paul Skenes. I know Pittsburgh lineup isn't anything really that at all. It's O'Neill Cruz, and that's about it right now. But still a very impressive debut from Abel. Had 9 strikeouts in 6 shutout innings with 0 walks, which is, you know, I think the key for Mick Abel. Anyone that's, you know, known me and this podcast, I think that might be the first person we ever talked about on this podcast.
Really? Big Mick Abel fan. I mean, he's a multi-time top 100 guy, right?
Yeah. He was a top prospect for a couple of years, but then the just consistent command and control issues kind of dropped him down basically every prospect ranking board out there, whether it was real life or fantasy focused. But the stuff was always there. I mean, he's still, as you can see, the stuff is nasty. It's upper 90s fastball. He's got a big curveball, deep 5 pitch arsenal, but he just couldn't do anything consistently because he was walking too many guys and not locating. But that kind of turned around this year. He went from having a walk rate above 15% last year to, you know, a little under 10% this year. It's still high, sure, but definitely much more manageable.
Right.
So, Paul, what are your thoughts here? I don't know if you saw the Abel debut today, but what are your thoughts on him? And he's someone you'd be looking to maybe target moving forward.
So let me ask you something real quick first, as a philosophical thing for you specifically. Do you think that there was any added pressure for him going up against Skenes? Or as a pitcher, can they channel and be like, I'm facing the Pittsburgh batters. What Skenes does and what our boys do against Skenes, his teammates in this case, is somewhat inconsequential to him. How do you think you would handle it? I'm not asking you to get into Mick Abel's mind, but I'm curious where you would come out on that, facing arguably the best pitcher in baseball right now and definitely a top 5 guy for your MLB debut.
Oh, absolutely. I think it'd be, yeah, I think I would definitely have a little bit of added pressure on me, you know, if I was facing a guy like a Skenes, or if I was facing like a Scooble or Zach Wheeler, you know, etc., those types of guys, as opposed to if I was facing, you know, like a Davis Martin,
Daly Falter, any old body. Like, obviously, it's still a major league player and all that. It's not to disrespect them. It's really to more put the other guys on a pedestal and say, "Holy crap, this is who I'm going against." And I got to imagine that there's a little extra tinge there. But hey, if there was, Mick Abel fought through it because he put out an absolute gem. Now, again, he was facing those Pittsburgh batters, and we do have to take that into account. But I go back to my earlier point there about this is a multi-time top 100 guy who we probably have a little bit of prospect fatigue with Mick Abel because he's been around for so long and in those prospect lists. He's now fallen off of most of them. But this man's 23 years old. This is still a youngster here, and he's taken a big jump this year in the control with a 10% walk rate. And I understand that when you hear that that's a big improvement, you're still kind of scratching your head because it's not that good at 10%, but it is an improvement from the 14, 15% that we saw the last 2 years. So baby steps here, right? And we've seen guys be successful in that 9 to 11% walk range. You got to miss a ton of bats and you got to be pretty unhittable otherwise, right? Because you're making up for it ideally with your hit suppression. And it's yet to be seen if Abel can do that consistently. But as far as going after him tonight, now in the NFBC universe, he will not be available because unless he was drafted and cut, which he was not. Let's just be clear. He's not going to be available. You have to have been drafted or a previous major leaguer to be in the pool. So Abel's going to be a free agent. Problem is, this feels like more like a spot start than an opportunity, right? Because it's still Sanchez, Lizardo, the two studs, and Taiwan Walker, the two studs being Wheeler and Nola. So I still don't think there's any room at the inn where you can bid tonight. I would be very cautious on Abel just because I don't know what sort of long term we've got here, but I love the outing. It was really impressive to watch him dice up Pittsburgh.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, there's probably not really any short-term value here, but you know, I'm still intrigued. It's like a long-term thought on him. I'm intrigued because, you know, I never made this like exact comp, but he gave me a little bit of like Strasburg vibes way back, or after he was drafted, because it's similar frame, you know, that 6'5" righty, little bit on the lankier side, but not like, you know, Chris Sale type skinny or anything like that. A little bit on the slider side, but just, you know, the big fastball, the big breakers, like there was a lot of good stuff. He just never was able to harness it consistently. Now he's starting to. And yeah, like I've kind of always called this the Freddie Peralta rule, because he's the first one I always thought of when this, you know, yeah, it is like 10% walk rate. Yeah, that's still high. Yeah, you'd like to see it lower. But if you're missing a ton of bats, you can make it work. And we're still waiting to see if Abel can be that guy, you know, but he has the stuff to do so. So yeah, I'm definitely at least, I'm not like running out to, you know, Adam, trade for him, dynasty, etc. But definitely,
I totally forgot Suarez too. I put Walker back in. So that's actually kind of the deciding point there, but it looks like Walker is locked in. Yeah, it says he's going to re-enter the rotation. He's actually going to replace Nola, because Nola's out with a sprained ankle, which I'm sure some people were yelling at their phones when I said that that he was part of it. But it's because I was looking at RotoWire here, and they've got a full slate of starters. Even with seven games, they still had no room for Abel. That's because Suarez is going to be in. So then it's Sanchez, Lizardo, Taiwan, Ranger, Wheeler. You still got your five. You got Abel being the sixth right now, and then of course Nola's going to come back. So again, as great as it is, we react so much to what happened, you really shouldn't be putting much of anything on Mick Abel right now, unless you're in like an NL only where you could really stash, and even if he comes up in like 2-3 weeks, there would still be some value. But I would be a single digit bid situation right now, as opposed to the other guy that we're going to talk about, where I'm very, very excited.
Yeah. The next guy up on the list, Zibby Matthews, did not have the greatest outing today.
That's okay.
Allowed, let's see, was it 4 earned, 5 hits, 3 walks, 5 Ks in 3 innings against the Milwaukee Brewers, but was pitching very well in AAA. And, you know, I don't take much from that, you know, 9-start debut last year. Yeah, the ERA was 6.69. Yeah, the whip was 1.65, but he still had an 18.1% K minus walk rate. Just still pretty darn good. I mean, yeah, I'm not gonna sit here and say he was great last year, but I don't think
the
he was
skills quite were as there bad. Though, right?
Yeah,
like with Zebby Matthews, I like to call Zebediah, like the core skills were there. 18% strikeout minus walk, which is why we don't put a lot of stock into the surface results, which was the 6.69 ERA and even the 1.65 whip. You're looking at a 3.64 BABIP, a 2.6 homer, 9 that never really got time to regress. And he's got to pay for some of those homers. He's got to answer to those. But he strikes me, Matthews does, as a guy who fits perfectly in the Twins rotation, which is the style that they've created, are these guys that have great strikeout to walk ratios and home run problems because they live in the zone. So I don't know. Like, I think he's better than a 2.6, but I don't know that he's going to be like some sub one guy. So he'll have to be able to live with like a 1.10 to 1.2 home run per nine. But if he's putting up an 18% to 20% strikeout minus walk, then I think he can do it. So today's start was a little rough. I think the Brewers offense hasn't been great this year, but they're still one that I respect. They got dudes that you can get that can get you anytime.
It's not Pittsburgh.
Right. It's a very competent lineup. So they got to him. Honestly, I like this. Keep the price down on the bidding. I'm still all in. Tough part is, as far as the main event goes, not available for me. I'm in two main events, not available. So a lot of people held through on Zebby because he was going to be so desirable when he comes up that he's not even necessarily available. Now, that won't be all leagues. I think I'm in here. I should check what sort of runway he has. Yeah, he should be in, right? Because did SWR go on the IL?
Yeah.
Is that how he got in?
He got sent down, I believe.
He got sent down, even better.
Yeah, I don't think
he's going to root for injury. I don't. Right. I never thought he should have won the spot, right? Like, that's the thing that really got me with Simeon Woods Richardson is like, how did Festa or Zebby not beat him out from day one? So that's actually better, because then it's not a time limited thing. Because if SWR was only on the IL, you would be thinking that Matthews would only be there until he gets back. Can't lose your job to injury, all that sort of stuff. But no, this gives Matthews an opportunity. I am fully in here. This is somebody I'm going to put where I can, which the two main events, no, but he's available in other leagues. I'm going to put a pretty aggressive bid. He gets KC and then at Seattle for his next two starts. Love the KC. Don't love the at Seattle. They are actually hitting righties pretty well, but you still like going to that park. So I'm starting him for both of those for Zebby Matthews in just about every format. I'm really in on him. I think he's a very nice pitcher.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, I've always loved the obviously the super low walk rate with him, and but he can also miss bats too. And the fun thing this year, you know, started in spring training, you guys saw a little bit of it then. That's carried over into the regular season. His velocity is up this year, and this start it was up a mile and a half on his four seamer, 1.2 miles an hour on the cutter, and a mile an hour on the slider, which are the three pitches he threw. 69 out of his 71 pitches, only threw one curveball and one changeup, but. Yeah, I mean, is it more of a high floor guy? Yeah, but not the high floor boring type. There's some upside here as well with Zebby. And he was going up against Freddy Peralta, a very good pitcher in this start as well. So, yeah, I'm definitely in on Zebby. I think there's going to be some nice starts from him upcoming. And like you said, Paul, should get some run in that rotation. All right, let's go back to the Phillies, though. I probably should have switched around the two debut guys to have this nice Philly segue, but oh well.
Actually, you did in the rundown. Yeah, I did. Yeah, about them in different order.
Yeah,
and maybe that's my fault because I brought up Abel with the whole like, would you be nervous against Skeens thing? So I'll own that one. Don't worry.
Nah, that's totally on me. I should have gone how I wrote it on the outline, but well, oh well. But yeah, we're going back to the Phillies. We're going to Aaron Nola. Yes, is on the IL right now with that ankle injury, but just has not pitched well at all this season. 9 starts, 6.16 ERA, and a 1.51 whip. But this is a guy that's coming off a year, 3.57 ERA and 199 in the third innings, 197 strikeouts, 1.20 whip. He's kind of been living in that 1.15 to 1.20 whip range, but just continuing this really weird on again, off again, even odd year thing where he just pitches great in one year, not in the other year. But this year it's been really, really bad, like worse than usual. Are you concerned about Aaron Nola? Like, obviously he's gonna be out for a little bit. When he comes back, are you thinking that, you know, this is just a kind of a speed bump, he'll be better, or are there signs here that this might be something more troublesome moving forward?
I think one of the signs is history, right? We've seen these seasons. You talk about his on again, off again, his up down nature. If we just go by ERA, you know, coming into this year, it's been a real up down each of the last 4 years, 463, 325, 446, 357. So he has these bump years, Aaron Nola does, and then he bounces back, has another bump, bounces back. And now this fits the pattern of another bump. Now, I don't believe in the pattern of it, right? That's happenstance. And we've seen other guys create these kind of crazy patterns. I think the one that Jason Collette loves to reference from a bit older time is Brett Saberhagen. And he called it Saberhagen metrics because he would have up and down seasons. A lot of that was tied to injury with him. We haven't seen that with Nola, though. He's actually been one of the workhorses of this era, going no less than 180 innings each of those last four seasons, oftentimes pushing 200, 205, 194, 199 in the last 3 years. I think there is something here. The home runs have been a big problem now for quite some time. He's kind of worked around them at different times, although the one of the good years of these last four, 2022, he actually brought the homers down to 0.8. Other than that, he's been 1.3 or higher in the other three of the four seasons, and then this year it's at 2. So do I think Aaron Nola will be better than what we've seen thus far, 6.16, 1.51 ERA whip combo? Yes. Do I think it's going to get back to last year, though? I don't think so. And not necessarily. I think it's going to be another one of these bunk ERA seasons. So in the low to mid fours. And then the whip, it was 120 last year. Probably add a little bit more there if he's going to be getting beat up a little bit more. And all of a sudden you're in the 125 and higher range. And all of a sudden, Nola's like a deep league only kind of guy in terms of someone that you're starting consistently. Otherwise, maybe a team streamer in your medium and shallower formats where you don't want to cut him because he's too good. And if Nola clicks, he can really go on a run on a great team. I get that. But you're not blindly starting Aaron Nola based on the name value. When he comes back, I think we need to have a real assessment about starting him in only the good situations right now. For example, he's penciled right now. And this is if he has, you know, a light stay on the IL, but RotoWire has him for Milwaukee the following week, May 30th. That'd be a no for me. Milwaukee at home, Milwaukee in Philly, I think that'd be a no for Aaron Nola. And so I'm going to be starting to cherry pick spots for him, but I don't think we can blindly trust. So I stopped short of a cut or anything like that, but my trust level has come way down.
Yeah, that's definitely fair to say. And I'm definitely a little bit concerned that, you know, the velocity was down about a mile per hour, both on the four seam and the single and the knuckle curve as well. Everything was kind of down about a mile an hour this season. And none of his pitches had really been doing well. You look at,
right,
it's a 270 batting average against or above on all five. You know, the XBA, it's not like he's been unlucky. The XBAs are both all kind of in the same range. He's given up a lot, you know, a lot of hard contact, not missing bats enough. You know, the bat missing has kind of been slowly trickling down. So you kind of got to wonder, I don't think he's going to age as gracefully into his 30s, you know, into his, you know, mid 30s as, you know, his teammate Zach Wheeler has, yep, who is just like the poster child for that. Just like knowing how to pitch into your 30s. But yeah, I don't see that same kind of success with Nola. I think he's still going to be useful. I don't think, you know, the days of Aaron Nola being a useful arm are behind him, but it has been that downward trend even more so this year. So yeah, I'm definitely concerned, and I'm with you. I think we got to wonder, this is a guy that's been like, all right, you start him and forget him every time,
right?
Every time he's coming up in the rotation. But now it's
and
like,
that's all right, the only change right now with Aaron Nola. Again, I don't want to go too far afield here and get people to start cutting him, even in your 10 teamers. I think you should hold.
Absolutely. But
you just have to start paying attention to him instead of the set and forget, because frankly, you could make a case that he's the fifth best pitcher on the team right now behind Wheeler, Lizardo, Sanchez, and maybe even Suarez. Yeah. You know, Suarez has an ERA problem himself, but his FIP is 259. His core skills have been way better than Nola's. So, you know, he's just not where he's been. And we're just telling you, be more mindful of when you start Nola, because if you set and forget, you're going to take some bruises.
100%. Yeah, that's kind of weird to think about. I didn't really think about it that way, where, right? Yeah, he's like at best the fourth. He's obviously behind Wheeler, Sanchez, and with Lizardo.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, now it's like, yeah, he's in the range of Suarez range. I never thought I'd be saying that. At least not quite yet. But
no.
Yeah, yep, that's where we're at with Aaron Nola. Let's go over to a younger guy who hasn't been terrible this year, but we thought he'd take a step forward. He was a hot draft day name. Just hasn't really worked out.
I was part of this too. So I'm glad you brought him up.
100% me too. Gavin Williams of the Cleveland Guardians. You know, he's a 4.29 ERA through his first nine starts. Not terrible, but a 1.64 whip. The K rate's up, great, 27.3%, but also the walk rate is up to a career worst 12.8% as well. I mean, Paul, this guy, like, you watch his starts, like, the stuff is really good.
I've watched every single one.
Yeah, it just never, like, fully clicks with him. He's just so maddening. I know. Yep. At this point, are you still kind of hoping that Williams can take that next step and kind of be more than he is, be that impact arm? Or do you think this is just what he is at this point, just a talented yet inconsistent arm?
No, I am still hoping. And part of it is my pre-buy-in and the fact that I believe in the guy. But it's not a blind loyalty of like, I'm just going to go down with the ship, right? I think over my time in this industry, I've shown that I can adjust on things and acknowledge when I'm wrong and take an L on a guy. I'm just not there yet with Gavin Williams. I said I want to see through this two-step here. It's at Minnesota and at Detroit, the hottest team in the universe. I know they lost today, but you know, Minnesota, amazing, and the best team in baseball, at least by record. Everyone knows I'm a Detroit fan. I'm super excited about the team, but push come to shove, I don't think I would rank the Tigers as the top team in baseball. But the bottom line is two good teams on the road, kind of the final litmus test here. And then I'm going to check in and do kind of a full scale. Okay, it's 11 starts in. I usually say like about 10 for a guy like this that I like. Since it's a two-start week, we'll bring in the 11th start. And let's see where he's at, Gavin Williams. Because as I mentioned, I have watched every single one of these starts, and you use the perfect word that I was going to use, maddening. So unbelievably maddening, because it's there, because you can see it in every one of these nine starts so far. There has been at least a glimpse, if not quite a bit more, of the Gavin Williams that you and I and many others were promoting and buying in on this year. Now, the good news is, outside of the 10 walks in the last three starts, 5-4-1, only one against Milwaukee, outside of that, we have seen some hit and run suppression that has been pretty good. 2.57 ERA, and a pretty decent. Actually, I think the WHIP is still a little high because of the five walk game. Well, five and four. The two bad walk games are still keeping it pretty high. So it is still a pretty high 178 WHIP. I will definitely grant that. But four hits in each of the last two games. Only four total earned runs during this time and 23 strikeouts in 14 innings. So he's close. And I'm very reluctant to just get rid of a talent like this because the second he strings together a handful of good starts, we're going to see triple digit bids for Gavin Williams. And that's why I'm reluctant to move off of him. So I haven't yet. I haven't started him in every single start, but I've started him for most of them. I'm going to start him on the two step this week. And if we don't see some building on the one walk game, the continuation of the strikeouts and a couple good starts here, then I think I am at the very least going to move him to team streamer, which again means I don't start him all the time, but I don't cut him when I'm not using him. And then in 10 teamers, I think you'll be able to start cutting him if this two-step goes poorly here. But I am still in generally. I just want to see what these next two look like. And then he gets the Angels after that. So if he can get the ball rolling here with these three starts, both all three being decent or having some elements of quality to them, with two good starts this week, and all of a sudden we could be on something. But a lot of words to say that I'm still on Gavin Williams, though I am dented, right? I'm taking the hits here, but I can't quit him just yet. Where do you come out?
No, I can't quit him either. I've been a big Williams guy ever since he was drafted. And you still see, like we said, you watch starts, like you still see how good this guy can be, just not for very prolonged periods.
Right.
I think the big issue, I mean, outside of the walks being high, is that the four-seamer has been extremely hittable right now.
Yes, and that's been the problem. Hamilton's been hammering on that. I love Tommy Hamilton, absolutely, the radio guy for Cleveland. Yep. And so I usually have his audio with the video. And, you know, he's on it too. He's like, this fastball, it's just too hittable in tough counts. Like he's always like on the verge of it capping an inning, on the verge of closing somebody out. And then the fastball goes through for some junk-ass hit. And a lot of times they're good hits too. I'm not saying everything's been unlucky or anything like that. But there'll be that one like little floodgate two out single. And then all of a sudden it's three earned and he's coming out of the game in the fourth inning. Like stuff like that has happened too. It's just been frustrating because you know this is a talented arm with Gavin Williams.
Yeah. I mean, you look at both the breakers, which have always been good, are still good. You get a batting average against under 200 on both the sweeper and the curve, slug allowed under 300, and you even get a 51% whiff rate on that sweeper. But the four-seamer, 341 batting average against, 600 slug, and, you know, expected metrics are right there too. So 451.
Elements are there. The elements are there.
I would love him to add like a sinker or something. He has a cutter that he barely uses, 3%. Well, last year it was 12%. He kind of went more with the sweeper this year. A little bit of a pitch mix change here. But, yeah, the cutter only used 3% this year, which is about 93 miles an hour. Just something that hasn't been good either. But you got to use something else because this four-seamer is not working. I would love a sinker.
I think so. I think a sinker might be the answer for him. And, you know, Cleveland, like, I don't think they're the greatest pitching development team, but I like them as a pitching development team. I feel like they get the most. And maybe it isn't even necessarily the development, but rather the bullpen and, like, defense behind them has elevated their guys, you know, a half level or a level beyond where they would be normally. But even if that's the case, the bullpen is still very good. I know Class A's had some troubles. They still have a good bullpen. So if he can get through five Gavin Williams with a lead, he's got a good shot at a win too. So I do like the context that he's in. It's just, I'm just not going to quit him. And I understand people have moved on in shallower leagues, but if you're in a 15, I just don't think you're finding anything better on the wire anyway. So again, maybe you're not starting him all the time, but who are you finding better on your waiver wire than Gavin Williams that you truly trust week to week to week?
Exactly. I'm just hoping that he can correct this because I don't, you know, there was another Cleveland pitcher, you know, recently that they got rid of who was good breakers, terrible fastball. He also weighed about 100 pounds less than Williams, but I just don't want this to be like Tristan McKenzie part two, where the fastball just never, obviously he had his injury issues too, but you know, where the fastball just never gets to a point where he can be a reliable major league starter. So we'll see. But yeah, I'm still very much in on Gavin Williams.
Big week for Gav. Big week.
Yeah, hopefully. Let's keep our fingers crossed. All right, let's keep it in the AL Central and go up to, I got to, you know, mix in some Tigers here. We got two Tigers here, obviously Paul being a Tigers fan. We got one that's been, kind of meh. The other one good that we'll talk about later in the show. But we'll start with the rookie, Jackson Jobe, who just pitched today on Sunday. Pitched pretty well, two earned and six with five strikeouts. He's got 12 strikeouts now in his last two starts after having 13 combined in his previous four outings. So starting to tick up, but you know, overall strikeout rate is still below average. Whiff rate still below average. He's been kind of maddening to watch as well.
I was going
to
say the exact same thing.
Jackson Job, if you, especially people that, you know, have followed Job up through the prospect ranks, you know, he's one of the top, if not the number one pitching prospect in baseball for the last couple of years. He's been that in that top tier because of the upside, the bat missing ability that he showed in the past, the lower walk rate that he showed in the past. Both of those kind of went in the wrong way last year and have stayed in that wrong way this year. But, you know, what have you seen from Job? You know, what do you think he can be? Do you still think he can be that high impact, like stud arm, or are you a little more cautious with him right now?
No, I fully believe that Jackson Job can still be an absolute lockdown superstar stud ace type. However, is that going to happen this year? Probably not. Simple fact is probably not. Yeah. But we drafted and we went after him because what if he is? When you're the top pitching prospect in baseball and when you are this good, like there is that chance and it's a better than zero and it's not just a total Hail Mary shot that Jackson Job could have hit the ground running and been amazing day one. Well, he hasn't been. He's struggling a bit more and it's not like he's been ruining your season terrible. 4.32 ERA, 1.47 WHIP coming into today, got the ERA down to 4.12. I can't do the WHIP calculation in my head, but he lowered that a little bit as well with what he did today, allowing 8 base runners in 6 innings. So not too bad. And I've watched all of his starts, and you said the word again, maddening, because you can see it. It's right there. Now, I don't even think he's quite as far along as Gavin Williams is, which is why Gavin Williams is a bit more maddening. I've got a lot more leeway for Job. He is still just a rookie. He pitched 4 innings in the majors last year. Who cares? That's basically nothing. So he is on the job training right now because I don't think he completely aced AAA. I think he should be in the majors. You should not be using those bullets in the minors. He also happens to be on a team where they don't need him to be the ace. He's kind of perfectly placed as a number 4 and with the pressures that come with that, meaning you don't have to win all the time. Like you don't have to be a god. Even if you have some bunk outings, either the offense can support you and the team still wins, or maybe they lose. Like you don't have to freak out and carry the team. They got Scoobs, Flaherty, and Olsen for that. You can be the 4. So I'm fully in on Job long-term for sure. If you could get even a measure of a discount, a 1-round, a half-round discount in your dynasty leagues, whatever that would entail, I would pay for him. I'd pay full market at this point. So if I can get even a shred of a discount, I would do that. But it might just be an up and down type of season. And he might click in and go on a run, but we're just watching a guy learn right now. And that's part of what you drafted, right? When you think about where you got Jackson Job, what you were drafting, which was a rookie, this is very much in the range of outcomes and not even on the low end, right? Like this is a pretty normal outcome for a rookie, right, Eric? Yeah. Like it's hard to even be too upset about this. I'm going to hold him, but he's a team streamer at the very most. I don't want to put this talent back on the waiver wire, so I don't really cut him in formats where I wouldn't be using him. I'm playing almost exclusively 15s this year, so I would never, but even in like a 10 teamer, I don't think you want to drop Job when you're not using him because somebody will snap him up. And then what if he clicks in?
Yeah.
Cleveland and San Francisco is next two, both at home. I think I'm starting him everywhere for both of those starts. Competent offenses, but both are at home. I like that setup for Job. So I'm still in, but there's going to be bumps. And if you can't deal with the bumps, maybe you try to trade him or in a 10 teamer, I guess you could move on. Cause I doubt his trade value is super high in a 10 team redraft, right. But I like Job.
Yeah, no, I'm still pretty high in Job. You know, when I, you know, said that I still had him as in that top tier pitching prospects with Chandler, Painter, etc., people kind of scoff at it. Why? I'm like, well, have you watched Job start? Like,
he's, yeah,
yeah. Like you said, this is your standard rookie season. Yeah, we had Skeens last year. We had Schwellenbach. We had Imanaga. It was like last year's rookie class was phenomenal all the way around. This year's kind of, you know, not so much, but not great. But yeah, this is kind of like your typical rookie year. They show flashes of brilliance. They show flashes of, I love how you said he's learning, because that's basically what I've been saying in just writing articles about him. What I actually wrote 45 minutes ago in my article for tomorrow, for Monday morning, that, you know, he's still learning how to be a good pitcher. Right. Learning how to maximize his really, really good stuff, how to sequence the right way, when to throw what, where to throw what. Like, he's still kind of going through all of that. And he's showing
and learning it at the majors.
Yeah, exactly. In, you know, in Detroit's pretty, you know, pretty good team. So I'm glad that he can kind of, yeah, you said he doesn't have to be the dude like Skeens was last year. Mm-hmm. He can be the, you know, the 3-4, whatever it is, and kind of to settle in. But yeah, I think it's going to be better. Better and more consistent results moving forward. I think you'll see that whiff rate, that K rate start to tick up. Yeah, so I'm definitely buy on Jackson Job right now. Another rookie who's been struggling a good bit here in his first 8 starts of his career, Chase Dolander, 6.28 ERA, 1.42 WHIP. I mean, he was a tough one, you know, as a prospect because, well, he still technically is a prospect, but obviously this is like the best pitcher that Colorado has developed maybe ever.
Right.
But it just like, if
it's still Colorado,
it's still, that's the thing. Like I was like, I ranked him high, but not like super high because I'm like, it's still Colorado. Nobody's like Herman Marquez had some, you know, low value mm-hmm. there. Ubaldo had that one super ridiculous year that he kind of fizzled off into the sunset, but can anybody succeed in Colorado? And Dolander currently has, it's just 4 starts in Colorado, but where was it? 8.66 ERA, 4.29 and 4 starts on the road. So even a super talented arm like Dolander, who I think is not far off from Job on just a pure talent level,
right?
But he has to deal with Colorado. So, you know, any intrigue in Chase Dolander here for you long-term, Paul?
Long-term, yeah. I mean, I still have some interest. You know, today when we're recording, Sunday the 18th, 4 2/3, 1 run in Arizona, which is awesome because that team is amazingly difficult. Arizona is like an aces only type of team that you, in terms of who you start against them. So the fact that he stood tall for 4 2/3 and only gave up the 1 run with 6 Ks, 2 walks and 3 hits is nice. But he's like a half pitcher at most, Dolander is road only. And then what are you chasing on the road? The Colorado can't support him enough to get any sort of consistent wins. So then you're kind of betting on ratios and you're getting like 4 to 5 innings of those ratios and you need Ks. And again, you're getting low innings counts. Interesting prospect. I even fabbed him when he came up for like 50 some bucks, but push come to shove, it's like, I shouldn't have done that. That was a waste of 50 some bucks because I was never going to feel confident starting him. And the one good start I got out of him was an accident. I freely admit that I left him in my lineup to face Atlanta at home. And he went 5 2/3, 1 run. I got lucky as hell. But yeah, Dolander is one of those where I'm going to be rooting him hard in real life because I want Colorado to develop a good pitcher. But in fantasy, I can't find the value. It's like NL only. Like that's the only league because they go so deep. That's the only league where I could think you could even find a modicum of Dolander value.
Yeah, it's so tough to like just to roster any Colorado guy in general, as we know. But
yeah,
that's why, like I said, I didn't push him like to the elite pitch. I think he had an item like tier 2, tier 3 in my pitching prospect rankings, but I couldn't put him up there with the Chandlers, the Painters, the Jobs, etc. Just because he's in literally any other team, even Cincinnati.
You know, literally any other team. Yeah, since even though they're difficult, like I could not agree with you more. Any other team.
Yep. But it's Colorado, and I don't think, obviously they can't get any pitcher to come there because who wants to go there? I think Chris Bryant's even, you know, kind of figuring out he shouldn't have gone there, but even though he's not a pitcher, but they have to develop from within. That's why they've been going so pitcher heavy, especially with the collegiate arms and drafts over the last several years. They know, like, hey, if we're going to have any, you know, decent pitching staff, we got to draft and develop it. So they're not going to get rid of him anytime soon or ship him off to another team. So you're
probably going to
absolutely. Like, so it's like,
we wanted John Gray to get traded, but like when you have something that might be something as Colorado, you hold on to him with everything.
Yep. Absolutely. So I love the talent, but it's just a hard guy to go out there and target, redraft, dynasty, whatever.
Yep.
While he has, you know, COL next to his name, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go over to the good guys here that have been doing very well. And man, who's been pitching better than Hunter Brown in baseball over the last like calendar year or so? Obviously he had that super terrible start last year. I think the ERA was like near 9 first like 6 weeks of the season. And he's been arguably the best pitcher in baseball, or at least top 3 to 5 pitcher in baseball since then. This year, 9 starts, 1.43 ERA, 0.83 WHIP, 67 strikeouts for a 32.2% K rate. and only a 6.7% walk rate. Every single slider on Savant is in either the pink or the red. I mean, he's been absolutely phenomenal. Doesn't allow a lot of hard contact. He's, you know, elite at that. K rate's high as it's been in 4 years in the major leagues. Walk rate's dropped about, you know, 1.5% this year. It's looking, if there's any, you know, red flag here, I'm not seeing it, Paul, or any reason to not think this is a top 10 guy moving forward. But, you know, maybe you think differently. Where are you at right now, Hunter Brown?
I do not think differently here. We are in lockstep on a lot of this stuff tonight, and I am huge on Hunter Brown. Was a big fan coming into the year. Obviously love what he's been able to do. He has just looked absolutely fantastic. You know, it helps, at least as far as my fandom goes, that his favorite player ever is Justin Verlander. And I think I bring it up every time I talk about him because I love that. He tries to model himself after him. He got to work with him. Like, how cool is that, that your idol was on your team? Like, that's just unbelievable. But he just seems like a cool kid. I just really like Hunter Brown. I was a big fan coming in. Like I said, I had him ranked, I think, in my top 30. And now, yes, he has elevated. I don't publish rankings like every week or anything. In fact, I do need to do an update since we are about mid-May now, but I keep a running tally going as the offseason goes, because I do, or as the season goes, because I do my daily SP chart. He's sixth right now, Hunter Brown, and he might even be due for another boost. Like, that's how good he is right now, that maybe he's only behind Skubo, Skeens, and Wheeler. Maybe he's four. Like, I believe in everything Hunter Brown's doing. I am a huge fan, and I would buy high before I would move. Like, obviously the 1.43 ERA, sure, that'll regress some. But, like, what's he going to be the rest of the year? Off the top of my head, 3 ERA, 1.15 whip. Like, I think he's going to still be great the rest of the year. You could buy high on Hunter Brown, and I wouldn't even have a problem.
Yeah. No, like, there's nothing in the profile that signals, oh, hey, he'll regress, outside of, like, yeah, you mentioned. All right, yeah, just in general, 1.43 ERA is probably not going to stick, but right, he just does everything well. Limits hard contact, misses bats, limits the walks, so gets a good amount of ground balls. Like, everything is good or great in the profile. So at this point, you know, I think the only, at least like long-term dynasty, all right, tier one is Skeens and Skubal. They're kind of locked in as tier one.
For
and
sure.
Tier, I think Brown's right in tier two, which has, you know, like, for Dynasty, Wheeler is probably a little bit lower now, obviously, because he's a little bit older.
Right.
But you got Garrett Crochet, Logan Gilbert. I think Strider could still be in that tier. You know, Hunter Brown has gotten right up into that range where he could be maybe even a top five arm, you know, moving forward.
Why not?
Yeah.
That's right.
I tried to poke holes, throw cold water. I couldn't find it. I couldn't find it. So
that's where I'm at. And I just think that that he is fantastic. So, yeah, Hunter Brown, go for him anywhere and pay the premium. Like, I don't even think that's a problem to pay the premium.
Exactly. 100% agree. Next guy up, Matthew Liberatore, who also pitched. I guess I picked a lot of guys that pitched today on Sunday.
That, that's perfect timing.
Just how it lined up. Liberatore pitched well again today, one earned and six, five Ks. Now has a 2.92 ERA, 1.03 whip, his first nine starts of the year. You know, obviously, he's not on Hunter Brown level, but this was a former, you know, fairly highly ranked pitching prospect who's been very up and down, you know, in terms of production, in and out of the rotation, to the bullpen and back again. You know, no consistency whatsoever from Liberatore first couple years in the bigs until now, where he dropped, I think the two biggest things for him, dropped the walk rate 3.8% and only has allowed two home runs all year, which are huge for him.
Yep.
But I think he's walking a fine line. I mean, allows a lot of contact in general, decent amount of hard contact overall, and he's a very pedestrian middle of the road in terms of bat missing. So I think he can still be like a fantasy viable arm. He's one where I'm like, all right, I think from here the value only goes down and not up or the same. So I'm more lukewarm on Liberatore. But what are your thoughts, Paul?
I think that's probably fair with Matthew Liberatore. I tag him as one of these guys where, and I even said this like when he was first getting going, like, I'm in on him. I'm a fan, but don't come along with me, guys. This is going to crash and burn. And not because I was trying to hide him, but because I been recommending him the last 3 years to no avail. And I was like, I'm still sticking with him, but I understand why if nobody wants to jump on board with me. Well, it is working. That doesn't mean that we go full bore and it's unquestioned greatness now for Liberatore. The reason I stuck with him, first off, I believe in prospect pedigree. Like, I trust folks like yourself, Eric Loggenhagen, Chris Clegg, Jeff Ponce over at BA. I can't name them all. I don't want to forget anybody, but I trust the prospect universe. I the work that y'all do, the evolution of it over the years too, by the way, just like the amount of coverage that we get, our boy Chris Welsh in Arizona on the ground all the time doing stuff. So when I'm reading all that stuff, there's merit to that. I don't just throw it away the second they get in the majors and throw 10 bad innings, or in the case of Liberatore, 182 bad innings, but spread out over three seasons.
Right.
And that matters to me, because your false start, your up and down, your start, stop, your relief, your starting. I just couldn't put too much stock into it yet. I want to see him get to like X amount of innings, 300, 400 innings before I'm even going to quit Liberatore. So again, when I say bought in, by the way, it means like when he was available, I put some bids in. I don't have him drafted everywhere. I didn't, stay that committed because he didn't have a role promised. I think I have him in two DCs, which is the exact place that you can keep your prospect commitments for guys like this, right? Your 48th round pick. Like, okay, I'll put one on my guy Liberatore. But I do think that with the command and control improvements this year, that there is something here. Now, when I say something, what's the rest of the year look like? I don't know, like a 420, 120 type of vibe, 420, 125. Yeah, so it's fair. A deep league sort of thing with Liberatore. There could be more, but he really has to maintain that 4% walk rate if there's going to be more, and probably a really good home run rate if he's going to be like low threes ERA. So let's not put that much pressure on him. If you can use a low fours ERA with a low 1.2s whip, which 15 teamers can, that's where Liberatore has the most value. In your 10s and 12s, ride it out, but don't go buying him or anything right now, because we have not seen a full transformation.
Yeah, no, that's pretty fair. That's kind of where I'm at as well. He's been really helped up by the fact that, he's at an above average ground ball rate, and a better than league average in the pull air rate, only 10.4% there. So even though he's allowing, worse than league average in terms of contact and hard hit rate allowed, I mean, it's not like hurting him too poorly. And then the low walk rate certainly helps as well. So, yeah, I think he's walking a fine line. I think he's still, he's made some improvements. So I'm definitely buying back in to some degree, but yeah, I don't think he's going to be like this impact. He's not like a blossoming ace type guy. I don't think he's
there. I think that's totally fair to keep it tempered there. Even as somebody who liked him, I don't want to be like, yes, I was right. Let's go full bore here on May 18th and forget all my priors, which were not convicted priors. I was saying, like, let me do this alone, guys. Let me go crash and burn by myself with Matthew Liberatore. I'm inviting people on the bandwagon now, but still, let's be careful.
Put your seatbelt on when you get on the bandwagon.
Right. Wear this helmet, please.
put all the safety equipment on, I think is what you're trying to say there.
Yes.
All right. Next name up, AJ Smith-Shawver with the Atlanta Braves. Very good so far through his first seven starts of the year. 233 ERA, 124 whip, 40 strikeouts in 38 and two-thirds innings. He had that huge ascension back a couple years ago. Probably got rushed to the major leagues, and that's fair to say. Kind of set him back a little bit, but he was pushed for a reason because he was super talented and still is. This year the metrics, pretty much a mixed bag. Some good, some bad here. 10.5% walk rate, near 25% strikeout rate. But allowing a lot of hard contact though. That's been a big thing for him this year. And the xERA is 4.91. So. A lot to kind of digest and sort through here with Smith-Shawver here, Paul. Are you buying or selling this hot start from him?
I tend to want to buy despite some of the flaws that you outlined there with AJ Smith-Shawver, because the upside is still rich. And he's one of these guys that can click in and pop off and maybe be, in that Strider Schwellenbach type of class, or at least adjacent to it, which is enough, because those were two of the hottest breakouts we've seen in recent years with Strider and Schwellenbach. So we don't have to hold AJ Smith-Shawver to that standard, but even being on the outside looking in, just like right there where those guys were, is pretty darn good. So there are flaws here, and you do have to be prepared for some potential damage, especially with a big two-step coming up the following week. This upcoming week, he gets at Washington, but then he goes at Philly, home to Boston. That's going to be a really big challenge for AJ Smith-Shawver, and we're going to see if that ERA is going to crawl closer to that expected ERA, or if he can really step forward. But it's a guy I want. And so it's somebody that I don't want to put on my waiver wire ever. So at the very least, he's a team streamer. And again, just to differentiate, what's the difference between a team streamer and a streamer? A streamer, you use and you cut. That's it. This is not some novel concept I've made up. People have been using team streamers all the time. I'm just putting a name to it so that I can kind of understand how I'm using them better. Team streamer, you use them, then you reserve them when you're not using them. That's AJ Smith-Shawver for me. I'm not using him all the time, always unquestioned. But even in shallower leagues, I don't want to cut this guy because he could click and he's on a good team. I know they had the 0-7 start, but they've been fine since. He's on a good team with good support. He can have a huge summer. So I can't run away from him even when he has a bad start or even when the ERA regresses as you and I both expect it to.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think even if the ERA regresses, which I think it absolutely should, and you know, even if it's more like in the mid threes, which I think is, we'll put it right in the middle of the xERA and the surface ERA, you know, I think there's a chance the K rate could tick up because he has got a whiff rate above 40% on both the splitter and the curveball, which he uses a combined 49% of the time, and the four seamer is not bad either. So I think there's definitely, you know, I'm more in on him than Liberatore right now, though.
Me too.
I think there's a little more upside. Maybe Liberatore's a little bit safer, you could say.
I think that's completely fair.
Yeah, a bit more upside, you know, a bit higher ceiling with Smith-Shawver.
Smith-Shawver could drop a five on you and get back to the minors, but he could also be a rotation staple the rest of the year. Yeah. Liberatore, like we said, probably going to be like a mid to high fours on his low end and just kind of trudge along as part of the St. Louis rotation, but his upside isn't that rich. And so, yeah, completely agree with the assessment between those two. And again, I say this as somebody who's a big Liberatore fanboy, but that's just to speak highly of Smith-Shawver more than it is to speak negatively of Liberatore.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. All right, next guy. I mean, we've used the word maddening several times in this episode already. Talk about maddening with this guy. Mackenzie Gore. I mean, he's been around forever. He's still only 26 years old, but having the best year of his career so far. You know, even this year, it's been a little bit up and down at times too. 10 starts, 3.67 ERA, 1.30 WHIP. So even when he's going well, that WHIP is still on the higher end. But 35.6% strikeout rate. Oof. And a career best 7.5% walk rate. xERA right in line, 3.70. But he just allows so much hard contact. 12% barrel, 92 mile an hour average EV allowed, and a 49% hard hit rate. So it's like he misses bats, but when he does get hit, he gets hit hard. So it's that's where the inconsistency comes in. So obviously the arrow is trending up right now, Paul. But like, how much up should that arrow be trending? Like, is he going to be like a top 25 guy, or are you still a little reserved and putting him that high?
I'm not quite there yet, but I do have Mackenzie Gore just on the outside of the top 30. I have him 33rd right now in my latest update. Here's the thing. You mentioned the hard hit rate, and I know if you look at his profile, you see all these BABIPs. Every year they're high. In fact, this year's the worst. 376 BABIP is Gore's worst. The thing of it is, normally you'd look at a guy like this who misses bats so well. He's improved his walk rate. He has this huge BABIP. You're like, oh, that'll regress and he's going to be even better, as the 257 Sierra suggests maybe he could be. The problem is, Eric, he has always been a BABIP guy because he gets pieced up when he misses. And his line drive rate over the course of his career, these last 4 years for Mackenzie Gore, is the highest in baseball. Actually, the highest in the NL, and 0.1 behind Jack Flaherty, who it's so perfect that that's who's number one, because as a Tigers fan, I've obviously watched a lot of Jack Flaherty these last 2 years, and the same exact issue. He can look like a god for three innings, but then the inning that he has off, it is screamers in the gap. It's a two-run shot. That's Gore. And obviously the home run would not count to the BABIP, but you get my point. Like, when they get hit, they get hit. And so if you look at, like I said, the line drive rate, it's consistent. So I don't know that he's going to be able to fix the BABIP, but if he's going to hold these walk rate gains, then Mackenzie Gore can mitigate the damage of the BABIP and still be very good. I do think that there's a chance to overrate him because people will ignore the damage that a 130 whip can do to you because they get drunk off the ERA. In fact, I think this is the most overrated fantasy skill set is the solid ERA, great strikeout, terrible whip profile. Like, we go crazy for that. The other one is the one that's super underrated, which is like a high threes, low fours ERA with like a 110 whip and mediocre Ks. The great whip gets completely underrated. So he is in that overrated class. That said, like I mentioned, he's 33rd on my board right now. When you're striking out guys like this, it just builds you a margin for error that is worth getting in on. And if he can figure out whatever it is, now I haven't done enough to be able to diagnose Gore and why he gets pieced up, but maybe he needs to change a pitch. Maybe his fastball, maybe his four seamer should be a sinker as well, the way we were saying with Gavin Williams, or a cutter or something. But he needs to cut into this hit rate to really ascend to being an ace. But I'll take this version right now. Mid to high threes ERA, high whip with tons of Ks, and a chance to dominate every time out. I'm in.
Yeah, I think he started making the adjustment that he needed to make because last year it was a 55% usage rate on the four-seamer. This year it's down to 48%. And yeah, that's still been a pretty poor pitch for him. 337 batting average against on that four-seam. But you know, you look at the break all the secondaries though. Curveball 51% whiff rate, slider 49.3%, changeup 50%, cutter 45.5%. Granted, those last two are under a 10% usage rate, but still, I think if you just keep dropping that four seam usage rate even further, I think that'll even help the effectiveness of that pitch. Use those secondaries more, use the breakers to change the cut more. And I think you could maybe even take another step forward because, yeah, he can miss bats. Those whiff rates are phenomenal.
Just bananas.
Four over 45%. You just don't see. I mean, I think Blake Snell might have had a year like that recently, probably. Yep. But you don't usually see three above 40, let alone four. So, yeah, Gore, I mean, I think there's still some work to be done, but he's taking a step in the right direction. And, yeah, you said that super high K right now, kind of mad. I'll take, you know, 35% Gore. With a mid three ERA over 25%, he'd be like, yeah, I don't really want anything to do with him right now.
Or no, at least the fact
more,
that this
more of a back end guy.
Yeah, that K rate being, and now it has to stay elite because it is protecting him right now. It is his force field against really getting punished. Yep. But if he can improve the whatever pitch it is that's doing the most damage, probably the four seamer, to bring down the whip, then he can give a little bit back on the K rate. So bottom line is, Gore is a growth stock that you want to have. He might frustrate you a bit. Like, there could be an eight earned run outing somewhere in the mix eventually, just because when he's off, he's really off, but there's just too much upside to move away from him or anything like that. I think he's in the lineup against pretty much everybody. Like, maybe your Dodgers of the world and like the Cubs have been kind of an aces only type team. But I don't have many teams that I don't want to start Gore against right now. Like, he gets Atlanta this week. I think I'm going to start him against Atlanta in every format.
Yep. I would as well. I don't have any shares though, unfortunately, in anywhere.
I don't either. Mason, our good friend, huge Mackenzie Gore fan. Of course, this is the year he has zero shares.
I'm sure he's kicking himself about that one.
Big time.
Absolutely. All right. Two more names on the list, both in the American League Central. We'll start with Chris Bubich here, who I'm sorry. If y'all didn't go after Bubich because of my recommendation or lack of before the season, I'm sorry. I'm eating my words on this one so far, at least, because he's got a 1.66 ERA in nine starts, 1.10 whip, and over a strikeout per inning, 56 strikeouts and 54 and a third innings. You know, far less sexy arm than Gore, that soft throwing 92 mile an hour lefty, but a guy that has been, mixing his pitches very well, keeping hitters off balance. You know, he can miss bats with, all of his pitches, not at the elite rate Gore is, but it's a decent five pitch mix here. So I don't know. I don't think he's gonna be a stud arm or even a top 25 guy, but I think there's some staying power here with Chris Bubich. What are your thoughts on him, Paul?
Yeah, I came in more positive, so I'm kind of carrying over the positive vibes that I had for Bubich coming into the season and, trying not to do too much confirmation bias. Like, yeah, I got it right, because it is still 54 innings. Still a long season to go. But the elements that we've been seeing work have continued to work. You know, it kind of started with the little tiny three-start run back in 2023, and then he got hurt, and it was like, oh, man, I really wanted to see where that went. Well, then he came back to relieve last year, and relieving obviously easier than starting, but 30 very good innings. Like, okay, here we go. And then a big spring. So it's like he continued to kind of keep going on what that 2023 glimpse gave us. And that's part of why I bought in, because the price never really got too far out of pocket. And so he's been awesome this year. Bottom line, 87% left on base rate. That's reliever-esque, meaning it will not sustain. A starter cannot really keep straining guys at that level. But that's why he has a 166 ERA instead of, like, you know, a 289 or a 320, right? That is what's making the ERA that good. But I think he can be a mid to high threes ERA with a good whip the rest of the way. And I know Kansas City has not been awesome this year, but I still like the defense that they give you. And it's still a solid home park to pitch in. Right. It is actually sneaky decent for every other type of hit besides a home run. So it's not a total pitcher's park. But I like the setup that Bubic has, and I'm bought in here. I'm not trying to sell high because I don't think you're going to get a mint anyway. So right. I'm just going to ride this out everywhere that I have Bubic.
Yeah, he's still one where even though he isn't he's pitching very well. It's not like he has that super elite perceived value where people are exactly. like, Bubic is a stud. I don't think the mindset in general is there yet. So yeah, I don't think I would sell high unless you can get that type of price tag, then sure. I'm not
if you can
that,
improve but. Your team, by all yeah. means. Everyone knows their league better than we would, you know, they know their individual league, but generally I doubt there's a clamoring for Bubic, and that's why I'm probably just gonna ride it out with him.
Yeah.
Maybe try to sell, you know, when I get a guy like that I know won't bring me like a game changer on the trade market, maybe it allows me to trade one of my more established guys who will bring that game changer because I believe in Bubic. So sometimes a guy helps you indirectly in the trade market, and I think that would be the case more with Bubic than anything else.
All right, last name, and we're closing it out with the Tiger. Yeah. And one who I was super high on entering the season. A little bit of a bumpy first few starts, but you know, he's been phenomenal over the last, you know, 5-6 weeks or so. That's Reese Olson. 2.96 ERA, 1.17 WHIP in 48 2/3 innings, 25.4% K rate, 9.5% walk rate. So again, pitching very well over the last, I think it was 6 outings or so yep. after a bumpy first three. The reason why I liked, you know, Olson so much entering this year was, first off, you know, gets ground balls and misses bats. Like that, I love that combination. You know, limiting, you know, damage in the air and missing bats. I mean, last year he had the two offerings, 45.5% whiff rate on the slider, 43% on the change. This year, he's now up to 3 pitches with a 45% or higher whiff rate. Slider at 45.1, change at 50.5, and the curveball 54.5, though that's his, you know, fifth used offering. But he's got more of a sinker than a four-seamer this year. So he's made those adjustments, and it looks like it's working out very well so far. I'm assuming you're buying into this, Paul, but what are your thoughts on Reese Olson?
Yeah, fully agree that I am buying in on Reese Olson. Also was in big time coming into the season. So happy to see the progress that we've had. Those first three starts, they were bumpy, you know, getting beat up at the Dodgers. Not going to crush anybody for that, especially because right. it was like on the cusp. It was that last inning, that fifth inning that really did him in. And the same thing kind of happened at Minnesota, or not even kind of. That's exactly what happened. He pitched really well for 4 innings, and then the fifth inning came unraveled. And so obviously you don't take a guy off the hook for that. When I bring up stuff like that, I always want to be clear that, like, I'm not washing it away and saying it doesn't count, but I'm saying that there's a clear, tangible thing that needs to be kind of worked on. It's like that third time through, right? Like, can you turn that lineup over? Can you not run out of gas right there at that through 4 innings the way you were? And we've seen him dial it up with Reese Olson. 5 innings, no runs. 7 1/3, no runs. 5 2/3, 3 runs. Guess what? It was that final inning again, but at least it was in the 6th and not the 5th. 5 2/3, no runs. 4 innings, 3 runs against Texas. Okay, so it was a little bit more wobbly this time. It wasn't the last inning. It was just that there was a 35-pitch second inning that kind of doomed the start early on, and he did not really recover. And then 6 innings of 1-hit ball at Toronto just yesterday on the 17th. So he's been completely dialed in, looking a lot more efficient, better at getting that lineup turned over that third time. I was huge on Olsen this year, thought he could be a major growth prospect for the Tigers. Their pitching development's shown out beautifully the last few years, and I thought Olsen could really be the gem this year that they really put on another level. And so far that is panning out, and I fully believe it. I would buy him anywhere because I don't think you're going to be charged a crazy price. So I think you could easily go buy high and it wouldn't even break the bank.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like I mentioned, when the perceived value of, you know, a guy like Bubic, it's still not like super high on a Rhys right. Olsen, and he's one like I'm more in. I mean, I'm not low on Bubic, but I'm more in on Olsen right now than I am on Bubic.
Me too.
I think there's more upside there. I mean, he's taking the right steps forward this year. I mean, he's made, like I say, he made the adjustments, so you know that he's tinkering on things, and those have worked out well so far. You know, the more sinker, you know, approach this year, which does have a 321 batting average against, but, you know, that's helping that ground ball rate stay high. I mean, and it's all into the ground anyway, so only three extra base hits allowed on that sinker. So, yeah, a lot of good there with Olsen. I was buying before the season, and I'm buying even more now. Definitely a guy to target and, you know, maybe trade for if you can, if you play in leagues with trades, because I think this is very legit what Rhys Olsen is doing. But all right, that's going to wrap us up. Paul, thanks so much for joining us. This is always a good time talking baseball, talking shaved ice. It was a great hour. Thanks again, my friend.
Great talking with you, Eric. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right. And thanks to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone take care.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.